You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
The idea of helping mom or dad move to a senior living community brings up a lot of emotions. You want to be supportive, but it's getting harder and harder by the day. Lately, it feels like you're always concerned about mom or dad's safety. You're constantly stopping by to help out with household chores. You're spending more time as caregiver than son or daughter. It's a reality many adults face as their parents get older. If you're at that point, we can help. At the Good Samaritan Society, we work hard to help each of our residents feel loved, valued, and at peace every day. It's our mission, and we embrace it with a passion. It's possible your mom or dad may not be ready for that kind of move, but for many people, that time has come, and it's okay to ask for help. To learn more about how we can help you, call the Good Samaritan Society at 855-GOOD-SAM or visit good-sam.com. That's good-sam.com.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer, so let's bring her out. A star attraction, the one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
So if I was a stripper at that time, I think I would have had to throw money at the audience.
You would have been the house mother.
Really?
Yeah.
What does the house mother stripper do?
At that time, a house mother was just a chick that was in charge of all the girls, you know?
Oh, I would have loved that.
Yeah.
So did you make any friends, any stripper friends?
I didn't.
They didn't have a pole then, did they?
There was not a pole
then. Okay, go.
So I met the comedian. I had a few stripper friends, but they, at that time, stripping wasn't like it is today.
Right.
People are trying to get their, you know, PhD
in psychology,
earning money to go to school. And
right.
In those days, a majority of those girls were biker chicks. This
right.
was a rough fucking crowd.
Did you have the best body?
No.
Really?
I had nice titties, but no.
Were they nice to you? Like, when you were the new stripper, were they like, oh, this fucking bitch is coming in?
I'd have to say that I kept to myself because they literally were biker chicks.
Right.
And I had...
Were there lesbos?
Yes. The one friend that I had was a lesbian. And I think she's actually bi. And...
annoying.
You know.
And it's just pick. All right. All right.
It was
go.
The first person I ever remember in life meeting that was bi. And,
yeah.
And I remember thinking,
and
do you
for
like
the listeners,
me?
I'm kidding.
This is
go
I'm
ahead.
Comedian.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you think I'm sexy?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, you're not my type. And I was like, what? What? So I was in from the beginning
right.
on that. But so I'd done a lot of contests. And then finally, the management came to me at the Peppermint Lounge and said, you can't do any more contests. You have to work here. And so, up until that point.
So how much would you make at a contest?
You would make like $500. Can you? This is fucking Reagan
that,
era money.
And that is like,
Reagan
era
money.
The 80s.
It was
that's
like
awesome. Was it all cash?
Cash.
And fucking
that was just the amount you won, and then you would get your tip. So it's probably $600-$700. That can
wow.
you imagine a growing up on welfare with this whole thing? So for me, it was like I'm fucking
right.
sucking, the devil's penis at this
right.
point. Like I don't care.
Did
I'm
you
in.
Have to suck any cock at the?
No.
All right,
no.
good.
But I remember when I was hired, and I had to go downstairs, and the manager like get downstairs and go get dressed, and I had never been to the dressing room because
was the manager
always,
a guy?
Yes, I'd always been. Doing the contest, so it was separate from then actually meeting the real strippers. And as I was walking downstairs, I could hear a scuffling going on, and I peek around the corner, and these two biker chicks beating out of someone who was not as fresh-faced as me, but not, you know what I mean, not like them. And that was like, yeah, this can only be a short plan.
A little hobby. That's funny. Your boss is like, go downstairs and get dressed, and then come to my office.
It was, you know what? I'd have to say I didn't have that experience.
Right. All right. So you meet Alan Steven.
Uh-huh.
And what does he do? He comes up to you. He's like...
No, I didn't meet him in a strip club.
Oh, all right.
No, this is someone else. I became a comedian, or I was trying to become a comedian. By the way, guess who was one of my first comedy friends?
Who?
Roseanne Barr.
No fucking way!
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And she was like, you got to go to L.A., get away from this asshole.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
Wait, so you met this comic.
I met this comic, started doing comedy.
But who's not a well-known comic or...
No.
Okay.
And I'll tell you off mic later. I don't all know right. if... You probably wouldn't know him. But...
All right.
And then I decided I got to... Met a lot of other comics.
Right.
And they were like, you should go to L.A. You would kill it in L.A.
Right.
And then I went to L.A. and I worked at the Jet Strip during the day to make money so I could work doing comedy at
right.
night. And that's where I met my oldest friend, Jewel Shepherd. She's a B-movie actress, Jewel Shepherd.
Oh.
And she was an amazing stripper. God, she was an amazing stripper. And I had no balance. And I can't dance. I'm like
right.
the worst stripper. I can
right.
bullshit at the bar. I'm like right. that chick, you know. So,
wait a minute. So... How did this guy convince you to do that you were funny and to do stand-up?
Well, we were just dating, and he took me to go to the Comedy Works, and there was...
In Denver,
and there was a girl...
I haven't worked there in fucking forever.
I know.
What is that?
They're just bringing in, don't make me say it, the youngins.
It's so annoying.
It's a great club.
I know.
And I went to the Comedy Works, and there was a girl on stage, and she was bombing, and I...
Who?
I don't know. And so I was pretty drunk, and I said to him, I could do that. And he was like, you can't do that. Shaking your tits and telling a joke, you're full of shit. And so he dared me, and that's how I got on stage.
I started doing stand-up on a dare as well.
Oh, good.
All right, so you get on stage the first time. Is it a different powerful feeling than...
It's completely different.
...than when
yeah.
you took your shirt off
yeah.
and thought, okay.
Yeah. I have to tell you that when I stripped, I never did drugs. I never drank. Because I thought I made... remember when we were kids and there was this movie... got Helen, the blonde-haired actress that was in Paul Reiser's show.
Helen Hunt.
Helen Hunt was a teenage actress,
uh-huh.
and it was about her, slide into drug addiction.
Right, right, right.
Remember? I don't
yes.
know if you remember.
Was it
that.
An after-school
yes,
special?
Yes.
Your
that,
fucking life should be an after-school special. All right,
anyway,
go ahead.
But that. After school special
right.
informed me years later as a stripper, like, I should never do drugs.
Right.
I should never drink while I'm doing this. I have
right.
to, you know what I mean? I should always have my wits about
right,
and
right,
seeing
right.
a chick get beat up, I should always have my wits
right,
about
right,
me.
Right, right, right.
Doing comedy for the first time, and after that, I was like, Mama needs a cocktail.
Right, 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 right.
Stripping your body naked is nothing compared to stripping your soul naked.
Right.
And it was so scary.
But empowering.
Empowering in a different way. Empowering in a different
way. Like, because when you get that first laugh.
Oh, yeah.
It
oh,
is
yeah.
so fucking addicting.
And so he took me to, he had a one-nighter on a Monday night at some rock and roll club. He actually, the saving grace of this gentleman was that he had someone bring my mother. I didn't even know she was in the crowd.
No.
And I was so nervous, and I was drinking like a fish, and... you will attest to this. The comedians were so nice to me. That never happens. Right,
right, right.
And I was kind of freaking out backstage, right?
Right?
And in my mind, I'm just going to do it so I can show that motherfucker
right.
that I can do whatever
right.
I want to do, right? I didn't think I was ever going to do comedy.
Right.
Beyond that. And the other comics were so kind-hearted, and they had me write down my, name each joke and write
right.
down a list. Before the show, they went and taped it on the floor.
Right, right.
And it was that whole thing. And I went on, and I killed. Like, and I was like, whoa.
I know, right?
But after that, for 2 years, I couldn't buy a laugh.
Right.
But it's that
it's
first
time
that gets you, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go on, you're like, fuck!
Yeah, for 2 years after that.
So, and your mother was there. And
my
you had no idea
there.
Before you went on?
I had no
Did
idea.
Did you see her from
I
the audience?
I saw her from the audience.
And it didn't throw you?
It didn't throw me. And it was to see her... laugh her ass off in her wheelchair, and it was a rock and roll club,
right,
you know what
right,
I mean
right,
she's
right.
the only old lady in a wheelchair, right,
right, right?
And to look around in awe that people were laughing, and I wish my father could have seen
right right
could have seen that moment that we had together,
wow.
And that was a tremendous moment, and that's when I really understood that it's comedy that I am going to be doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So all right, so you do this one
uh-huh
And then are you just working in Colorado?
I was working in Colorado, and I was living with that guy who had a lot of pull at that time, mm-hmm. you know, how comics are. And then we broke up, and he was like, yeah, we're going to work in this state again. I was like, fuck you, I'm out of here. And I right. went to L.A., and right. I started
How'd you meet Roseanne? Well, she's from Colorado,
well, she
but yeah.
she was a comedian that right, I met right. in Colorado. And in fact, when Roseanne came out to L.A. to showcase, she stayed at my house.
Wow.
When she, yeah, when she became a regular at the Comedy Store and The Tonight Show, right. she stayed at my house.
That's amazing. Yeah, do you still crazy. Talk to her?
You know what? We're not. We're totally friendly when right. we're around each other. It's. I'd have to say, it was such a gift to, as a young comedian, to have a friend who skyrocketed out
right,
of fucking
right.
nowhere.
Right.
Because I. So many people, when that happens to someone, when they get fame so right. fast and people are on them like fucking leeches.
Right.
And we went out once to get a Fatburger, and this is about 6 months after she had done The Tonight, because she literally became a regular at the Comedy Store and got The Tonight
right,
Show, I
right.
think, all in 1 week. I mean, right. it was tremendous. And 6 months later, we were hanging out, and she was getting a Fatburger, and the show was starting to be in talks about, you know, writers and all that.
Right.
And she was like, Felicia, everyone is leeching off me. I don't even know who my friends are
right,
anymore.
Right, right.
And at that point, I thought to myself, you know what? I'm never going to be that person to her.
Right.
You know, and so our paths kind of went different ways, obviously. And but when we see each other, big hugs, it's all
did,
have
you,
cool.
did you ever do the show?
No, no, no. Our lives went completely different ways.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And at that time, I also moved to New York. So that
I feel like I wish... You know, like, I love that Roseanne was like, these people, I don't know what, you know, who's my friend and who's not.
Right.
I've never had that experience of people leeching on me. I'd like to, just for yeah. 10 minutes.
Just for a year.
Yeah.
Just for
a year. That's fine.
Yeah.
I just moved.
I know. How is that?
It's...
Who got you that apartment?
You did.
Wait, do you like it better even though it's smaller?
I love it. I love it.
Really?
So much more. We bought... a loft bed frame that's sort of, it's not completely high up, but it's not low, so we can hang clothes underneath store stuff. We had to get rid of our queen bed, though.
So what do you have?
So we have nothing right now. We've got a floorboard, basically, that we're laying on with blankets.
Get one of those Lisa beds.
Well, that's why I'm really excited that our sponsor is Lisa. Because I was reading about them today. The materials they use, do you know how much, like, crazy chemicals are in our bedding
yes,
and in our
duh.
Beds? And
That's why people get allergic to crap when they're in bed.
Yeah.
But my, you know, this Lisa thing, I have to say, I went, you know how, like, when I work in Florida and they give me a hotel,
yeah.
but we stay with the Lisa's aunt and uncle instead?
Mm-hmm.
I went over there a couple weeks ago, and she had this new bed frame and a new bed in the guest room. And I'm like, oh, that looks like really comfortable. And she said, oh, it came in a box. It was delivered to the door. You take it out. It pops open. It was a Lisa bed. It's such a good bed.
It's made out of this natural fiber material. Just stiff enough, just soft enough. The human spine does not differ that much.
What is with you? What, did you look this crap up?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm
you're
a
out
total
of your
nerd
mind.
About this stuff. Our spines are not completely formed yet, but all of them, like, we
look
at these
beds. Do you know people just shut off the podcast about the spinal?
I mean...
I have slept in a lot of beds because I travel and I'm a slut. No, that bed is really cute. It's really good because it forms to your, you know, your body type. And, like, a lot of those beds make you really hot. And it doesn't... this one... For some reason, you can't. It doesn't. It keeps you cool.
It's the materials that they use.
Because it's
all
natural.
Natural materials. I hate shopping for beds. You go to the dumb sleeping store.
Oh, please.
And this was started by humanitarians. Like, people that really give a shit about other human animals.
Well, let me just say something. And it's like, they're like, yeah, this is on sale. And then you go sit in the chair. It's exactly like a car. It is exactly, you sit in the chair. They're like, well, you know, you got to get this and that. Shut up. This bed is great. And... they just drop it off at your doorstep.
And I've read so many reviews on their Facebook page by people that love them that have been like, neck pain has been disappearing day by day.
Okay. Are they giving a discount? Because otherwise...
Yes! $75 bucks.
Oh, that's good.
$75 bucks off.
What do you do? Go to lisa.com. Mm-hmm. L-E-E-S-A. It's L-E-E-S-A. Lisa.
Right, Lisa. Not like the name.
Right.
So you go to lisa.com/gold.
Because my name is Judy Gold.
Right. And that's what this bed is worth. And you get $75 off.
Oh, that was funny.
It's a flat rate. It's so easy to order. I can't wait to get ours. And I'm going to post a picture of it on my loft.
Please don't post you without clothes on, okay? Because I can't.
I mean, write me at judysassistant@gmail.com and let me know if you want me to post.
All right, so... I'm going to get a Lisa bed, too.
Use code GOLD. $75 off.
That's right, baby.
All right. So then you're in L.A.
I'm in L.A.
You're doing the store. You're doing... What year is this?
Probably 19... I became a regular at the Comedy Store in 1985-ish.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And you're young?
Young. Super young. I might have been 21, 22.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And everything's awesome. Going great.
Awesome, awesome experience.
You did. Did you do any TV at that time?
Well, or? Because I started in that era, and you will, as you did, it, attest to this. You know, when you're that young, and you're around some of the most amazing comedians mm-hmm. that are changing the landscape of mm-hmm. comedy. And the Comedy Store was a very aggressive place to do comedy. Like the Improv was like, we're all the really smart,
right.
you know, college graduated comedians
right,
kind of,
right, right.
you know, went to. And they all wore ponytails and had right. an earring and a jacket. And
right.
But at the Comedy Store, it was like...
Raw.
It was raw.
Yeah.
And being at the age of 21, when the average, let's say, and I could be off a few years, the average audience member is probably 30. If you're going to average everyone out.
I would say early 30s.
Early 30s.
Yeah.
What can you talk about, especially
right.
as a woman,
right.
in that point, that you can have in common
right.
with this much older, somewhat educated audience?
Right.
What do you have in common?
Right.
Well, guess what? I was a stripper. I don't give a fuck about sex.
Right.
I can talk about sex.
Right.
So my comedy became... very aggressive sexually.
Right.
And I was, which was great at the Comedy Store because all the guys were doing it.
Right.
But I, it was in some sense harder for me in the long run because I was looked down upon by other comedians.
By?
Outside the Comedy Store.
But mostly female comics, no?
No, by a lot of guys too, outside the Comedy Store. In the Comedy Store, those were my bro-bros.
Right,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Right,
but
right.
outside the Comedy Store. Yeah, so
it's unbelievable, you know. When I mean, at that time in during stand up, you know, no one did that. No women. You look at, you know, I remember I used to dress. You dress down, like look at what Paula wore and
right,
Carol
right.
Leifer and Kathy Ladman and you know all these. But you just were never sexual. It was like this unspoken rule for female comics that you could not be sexual and funny.
Well, and I can't say I really dressed up a lot doing comedy then because to me, to wear high heels doing comedy, now
right.
I can do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but you're so hot and sexy.
Well,
and you know,
I wouldn't say that necessarily, but I wasn't.
Okay.
I didn't look like everybody else.
Right.
I could say.
And
that.
You didn't talk like everybody else.
And I had a really high voice.
Right.
You know what I mean? Thank God for, like I said, all the whiskey and weed I've been smoking and drinking.
God damn it. Such a really good decision.
But what a great time to have been in comedy.
Oh, my God. It was like.
Yeah.
I remember I could do sets. I could do so many sets a week. I would go. I was living in New York, but I would go to happy hours, street fairs.
Yeah.
I'd go anywhere.
And such a lesson to learn to be 21 and at the Comedy Store to see like on a Tuesday night Richard Pryor
right.
come in and eat a big piece of shit.
Right.
And to see him work his material by Friday night.
Right.
Being able to work that material like butter.
Right.
I mean, it was a tremendous lesson.
Yeah. Again, which because I can't, you're fucking unbelievable. So.
So kind of you.
Oh, shut up. So you are working, you know, doing it's we're now in the late 80s. You're
yeah,
doing stand up and you start getting some shit like we all I think at this that time. I mean, I was starting to get Evening at the Improv, Caroline's
right.
Comedy Hour,
right.
VH1 Stand Up Spotlight, you know, all those
right.
Arsenio, you
right.
know.
It turned around for me in the most unbelievable way. Because I was so dirty, I didn't get a lot of opportunity like that because comedy had to, you had to vet it when you went on a TV show.
Right, right, right,
right. You couldn't say boob, you couldn't say bruh, you know, right. So
Did any club owner, did any comics, did any agents, managers say, you can't be so dirty?
Everyone.
That's like, you can't be so Jewish. I'm like, what the fuck you want me to be?
Right. You know? Everyone, especially in L.A., what I mean? Yeah, at the time, yeah.
So, what were you thinking?
Well, I remember having a conversation with Jimmy Brogan. There's two stories I want to tell you.
Okay.
Number one,
Jimmy Brogan, by the way, booked the comics on the Tonight Show.
The Tonight Show. And I would say, Jimmy, how come you never look at me to, showcase me or anything for the Tonight Show? You know, I have material that's not really that dirty. And he goes, yeah, but it's a little bit dirty. And filthy comedy is, how do you say that? He was like, you could always, no matter how little the dirty or the filthy it is, you can always taste that. And I said to him, it's like garlic in a soup. No matter how small the amount of garlic in the soup, you can always taste the garlic. That's how he said to me. And I said, yeah, but if you don't have any garlic, then it's just bland. Never did the Tonight Show.
Oh, my
God. Never did the Tonight Show. And then I got so much shit from everybody. And then...
Everyone.
Everyone.
I didn't give you shit. Did I ever give you shit?
No, but you weren't, you were in your own thing. You know, I can't say you were ever mean to me. No, I can't say that. No.
See, I'm not mean.
Right, but we never had a great discussion about comedy. You know, because at the time you would have said, stop talking about your pussy, and I would have said, get rid of the spit curl.
Right. Yeah, but no, I don't think I would have ever. No, yeah. I think I was so focused on being a comic.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be a great comic.
And being a woman in comedy at that time, you had to be even more focused.
Right.
You know, because there were so few of us.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So then I went to go see Bill Hicks, the great Bill Hicks. And I used to have this joke about shaving my pussy and, it's in the era of Miami Vice.
Right.
You know, but then by 5 o'clock you have Don Johnson pussy. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And like it was some stupid ass joke, right?
I love those jokes.
And it used to kill.
Right.
And I got so much shit. And I went to go see Bill Hicks and... As I'm in the audience, it was another club out in the, Ontario or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Hicks does that joke verbatim.
No fucking...
You know, it's parallel thought. Obviously, I'm not calling him out or anything.
Right.
That moment changed my life in comedy because it was like, if I can fucking write... And at that time, people are already saying Bill Hicks was the next coming. You know
what
I mean?
Right.
If I can write a joke like Bill Hicks, I am on the fucking right
path. And it's funny that he can say the joke and have no backlash.
And I can't say the joke.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he use Don Johnson?
The joke verbatim.
Okay.
The joke verbatim. He probably never even did that joke again.
Right.
It was not a...
Right.
It wasn't that great of a joke. But the idea that I could at least write a joke like the great Bill
Hicks...
Right,
and think like him. Yeah.
Then it was at that time where I was like, fuck everybody. I just do what I do and don't worry about everybody else. And that was a big moment in my life, for sure.
Okay. When did you get your first sort of big break?
Well, from the unlikeliest of places,
mm-hmm.
by a little show at that time called Star Search.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I had not very much.
It's so funny
material.
Because that is the most milquetoast show.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
And you fucking won. Well, you were the grand fucking champion.
Won Star Search, yeah.
Fucking unshit. Fuck. Go.
I know.
So who were you up against?
Well, the thing is, when did you ever do Star Search?
No.
Okay. I went against Bob Zaney.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Leslie Norris.
Right.
But the thing about Star Search and how they filmed it in those days, did you ever do Star Search?
No.
You never did Star
no.
Search?
No.
Are you fucking kidding
me? I never fucking did Star Search.
I can't even believe
it. I know.
That. So, at the time, because I was one of the last people to do Star Search.
Right.
At the time, everyone did Star Search.
I know. I never did Star Search.
I must have auditioned for it 6 times. And then finally, I got to do Star Search. And the way they filmed those is they did it in 2 chunks. So they would do a bunch of shows in the beginning of the year. And at the end of the year, they would do a bunch of shows.
Right.
Whoever won the most shows or was champion at the end of the first chunk, then you would have to come at the end of the year and go against whoever became champion or semifinalist from that. So weirdly, because I had no clean, I literally had 4 minutes of clean material.
Right.
So weirdly, the chunk of I did the end at the end of the year, no one had won consistently. So I did the second to the last regular show, and I
Who were you up against?
I want to say maybe even someone like Greg Otto or Greg Hilbers. But it was someone, either them or someone like that.
So wait, and this is, so who had already won? Rosie had won?
Rosie had won. She won the first year.
Yeah.
No, because this was like the year before, I think the following year they stopped doing it.
Right. Okay.
It was the very end of Star Search.
Okay.
And so I got into the semifinals. Leslie Norris, do you know, remember Leslie? She was the semifinalist from the first chunk.
Right.
And so it, going after I did my one show or whatever, and I got into the semifinals, and believe me, my friend Alan Steen was like, you better borrow some of my jokes.
Right.
And then I was like, I think I better borrow some of your jokes. But then the day of, I was like, if I by any chance win this, people will never forgive that I had to borrow other people's jokes, right? So I was like, no, I can't do that. I got to do my own shitty jokes. So then I knew in the semifinals I would go against Leslie Norris, Carrot Top, and Bob Zane.
Right.
And so that is who I went up against in the finals.
So what kind of jokes did you do?
And you got to repeat your jokes.
That's so great.
I know. Miracle is a fucking miracle. And so the jokes were, I think, about my dad and my mom. I think, you know, my dad was very, I think this is one of the jokes. My dad was very macho when I was born and only thought macho men could only have boys, directly related to him taking my brother and not me.
Right.
And when I was born, he told my mom, why don't you shove her back where she come from? And my mom said, well, that would be pretty painful for you. That was like one of my only clean jokes. And involved a penis.
That is
penis.
Hilarious.
So then I, Bob Zaney went against Carrot Top.
Right.
And, you know, and he did props.
I figured Carrot Top would win with all those fucking props.
And what's so funny is I remember when right before we were going to shoot that, Bob and me were in the car, his car somewhere, going to the set. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, let's make a deal. Like, no matter who wins it, we'll all share the money. And I was like, are you fucking daft? Like, I'm not going to make that deal, asshole.
Right. So wait, like he would have given you the money.
Right. Like I would be like,
Ed McMahon want to fuck you?
No, because... how that worked on set is all the comedians and the child singers and everybody else were in this cafeteria style, convention roomy style dressing room. And Ed McMahon's was way on the other side in the private dressing rooms with right next to the model spokespeople.
Oh, isn't that special?
Such a great experience.
You win Star Search.
I had to go against Leslie, and Leslie is also very blonde and petite with a little bit of a high voice, and she went up before me, and I went up, and I said to her after we both went up, because they wait till the end to announce, I said to her, you know, I want to say to you that, you know, we're very similar, and you went up first. I think you have the element of surprise. You're very funny. I think you won, and I want to be the first person to congratulate you. And to be at that kind of in your 20s and to have that feeling is, you don't know till you get there that you're going to feel that way.
Right.
You know, but I was just so happy to be a part of it, and I wanted to say congratulations. And she looked at me. She was a beauty contestant kind of chick, and she looked at me with a big old shit-eating grin. She was from the South, and she's like, well, it's all in God's hands now.
Oh,
and
my God!
I thought to myself, fuck you, bitch. You, I'm going to win this motherfucker.
It's all in God. God is a fucking judge on Star Search. I can't stand that shit.
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. God is doing other shit. If there is a God, he's not fucking concerned with Star Search.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah. But then when I was announced that I won, and I remember standing on stage and seeing all the judges.
Right.
And I remember doing my little, you know, wave and thinking to myself, if these people only fucking knew that 5 years ago I was showing my pussy for money.
Right.
They would blow their tops.
Right.
I would be out of here like, you can't believe. That's why it was all very secretive.
Right. So now...
And by the way, I want to say, in the later after I won, I was in the dressing room, and I could hear Leslie Norris crying in the dressing room next to me, and I was all like, too bad, bitch, I'm drinking champagne.
I guess your tears are in God's hands now. Who did you call first when you won?
My mother.
Oh, and what'd she say?
Oh, no, I didn't. That is incorrect, because my mother had passed right before that.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't call anyone because I wasn't speaking with my father at that time.
Right.
It was all me, all alone, yeah, which was awesome. Great experience. That completely turned my comedy career around.
Wow.
Became a headliner overnight.
Right. So you start headlining.
Uh-huh.
You get a manager.
Right. All that. Did all those shows.
Did everything. Start getting booked on, shows, sitcoms.
Yeah.
And
I wrote a show and that got made into a pilot.
Right.
And did all that.
Development deals.
I had like five development deals.
I never had a development deal.
I fucking
swear to God.
That is just.
If you knew the fucking rejection,
terrible.
A development deal.
I am
too tall, too Jewish. Yeah. Too tall and too Jewish.
I can't believe that. Not even a holding deal?
Nothing.
Wow.
Everyone had a holding deal.
Yeah.
Every person had a fucking holding deal. All right. So. Your manager, you get a manager who you start dating. And that doesn't happen yet. That happens after you're very successful.
Yeah, yeah,
all right,
yeah.
So.
I met my future husband probably.
How many years after Star Search?
I actually met him because I had won at the right before Christmas, but I wasn't allowed to talk about it or say anything about it until the spring when they aired the shows.
Right.
And I had a big Star Search party, and I met my now ex-husband. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you start dating right from that viewing party?
Pretty much.
You did.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So you're dating, and you have another manager at this time.
I had Rick Messina.
Yes, I remember. How is Rick Messina?
I don't know. I haven't spoken to Rick Messina for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I went to a guy named Michael Rotenberg.
I remember him.
Isn't he
an agent now? Or?
He's a manager and partner in a company called Three Arts.
Right. That's right. I was with Three Arts.
Yeah. And then the Three Arts offices at that time were at the Director Guild's building on Sunset.
Weren't they so nice?
They were nice.
Yeah.
And then below that was the Messina Baker offices.
Yes, I remember.
And my ex-husband, who started out as a dishwasher at the Improv in San Diego, started managing a couple of improvs, and he then parlayed that into working as a segment producer on the old Dennis Miller show.
Right.
When he was
normal.
Yes. We moved in. The Dennis Miller show folds.
Right.
Now I'm living with a guy who has no job.
And you're the breadwinner.
He got a job then at Messina Baker.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very smart guy, my ex-husband. Very smart guy. And then I was hanging out with my manager, Michael Rotenberg, and he said, I'm looking for a new assistant. I called up my then-boyfriend and said, you need to call Michael Rotenberg right now. Michael Rotenberg hires him.
Right.
We're living together, working all the time, and did a good chunk, I would say, of 10 years of 35 weeks a year on the road.
Did he come with you?
No, because he was working.
Right.
And then he worked as Michael Rotenberg's assistant, and he came home one day and he said, you know, a weird thing happened at the office today. Mm-hmm. No one gives a shit, but people in show business would find this fascinating.
Right.
And he said, they were asking any of the assistants if they wanted to go to New York and start the New York office in a very small way. And I said, did anyone raise their hands? And he said, no. And I said, tomorrow you go and you fucking raise your hand.
Right.
Because if you go to New York and it's a success, no one will ever remember that you're an assistant. And that's exactly what happened. And that's how I moved to New York.
Fabletic. So, all right, because I've gone, you know how I'd like to work out. And I have my staple of workout clothes.
You also look good in workout clothes. Like, you could wear that on a... you're one of those people that...
No, I'm not.
Well, I enjoy the athletic look.
Right, because you're out of your mind.
Right. And I'm a lesbian.
And it's also... That's right. And you know what I can't stand? The ones that walk around with the athletic clothes and holding their yoga mat, you know, on the Upper West... Whatever. So...
Kill me now.
whatever. I can't stand when people are like walking around with their yoga mats like, I just did yoga and you're a loser. But I used to work out in t-shirts. And then even when I was like running long distances, but I used to get like little, you know, my skin would
like
tear.
Rashy.
And then your nipples get whatever. But anyway, so I did invest in some workout clothes. And
it's expensive,
really
right?
expensive. So I'll wear it like twice. I don't care if it smells. And then I have to like hand wash it. Right. So then I go on this Fabletics thing. And they're
so good.
They're so reasonably priced. And they're really cool looking. Like I would wear the Fabletics thing. Like if I was working out and then I had to go out to lunch, I could wear a Fabletics thing. But I would not be carrying my yoga mat.
I love it because they have an entire outfit for you, an entire athletic wear outfit. I mean, to me, you could wear it out, but it's definitely good for your workout. I'm ridiculous when it comes to picking out any kind of clothes at all. They do it all for you. It's like they could basically send you a hanger and there's, you know, your Under Armour, there's your shorts, there's your shirt,
right.
Boom. And you can get one for just $25 with free shipping as a new VIP member exclusive on Fabletics and on their FL2.
Fabletics!
Yeah.
And I wish they had a theme song. Hey, welcome to Fabletics. Yeah. No, but the stuff is really good. There's really good stuff for guys, too, because I got some stuff for Ben.
That's the FL2. New exclusive styles and outfits. It's really quick and easy, super simple, especially, you know, for us New Yorkers, just boom, boom, boom. You can shop by outfits or separates. You can get it a la carte if you will. And it's co-founded, designed, and inspired by Kate Hudson.
I know.
Definitely go to Fabletics.com/Judy.
Oh, it's Judy. Mm-hmm. J-U-D-Y.
Fabletics.com/Judy. And you'll get $25 off for becoming a VIP member, getting one of these sets that are usually $50 to $60. You'll get it for $25.
It's so good.
Yeah, check it out. If you're into working out, if you're an active person, live an active lifestyle, you can't.
Okay, now you
like
sound
me.
Like a commercial.
Oh, well, I mean, all right.
No, if you work out, I work out, and you look like a slob because you're wearing some old t-shirt from a comedy club you worked at 30 years ago. Just go on this website. It's reasonable. And you don't have to go into a store and everyone's like all buff and like, hey, can I help you? Because you can actually order it online. It's really cool.
You changed the course of his life.
Yeah, I think strippers actually should consult at the White House.
Right.
You know, because you know the game.
I know, right? Yeah.
You could say, if you do this and this and this and this,
right.
This motherfucker
I
over
bet,
here, don't trust
look,
him.
I bet Donald Trump would love to have a bunch of strippers consulting for his fucking campaign. All
right,
so.
Or to marry.
Right, so. So, all right. So now he starts Three Arts.
He started the New York Office of Three Arts.
What year is this?
This is probably 94.
Mm-hmm.
94.
This is when I was in L.A.
Right.
And you came here.
I came here, yeah.
And I
feel like I wasn't funny. I felt like I did okay, but I truly found my voice as a comedian in New York.
I think that...
That's a pretty story that everyone can probably say. Yeah.
So, and I started here, and I think it was... Yeah, New York is... You have smart people
right.
who can detect bullshit.
Oh, immediately.
That is the thing. They don't want bullshit.
Because I remember when I first started working in New York, and I'd be like, hi, my name is Felicia Michaels.
Right.
And they were like, what the fuck is this? And I was like, oh, I got to really be real now.
Right.
And that's when the comedy really started for me.
When did he start, you know, being your manager? Was it when you moved to New York?
Well, it was when I moved to New York because it had, you know, although I was already at Three Arts, you know, like, I was away from my manager, you know what I mean? And that was a time before you had to go to L.A. to get a manager.
Oh, my God,
and that time,
yes, and fly back and forth.
Back and forth.
Remember the planes were so empty?
Yeah.
You could have, like, an entire five seats.
It was a crazy time, yeah. So it kind of just happened organically that then he soon started to manage me. And that was out at the time of alternative comedy movement, and which was a difficult time for me. Yeah, I know. I don't know if for you, but at that time, because I had everybody that was coming up in the alternative scene were my exact age, but
right,
because
same.
I had started so much earlier than everybody, I was lumped in with the old guys.
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing about the alternative comedy. It was like, there was, I had mixed feelings about it. It, you know, I remember when I did my HBO special that.
See, I've never had a special. I would trade my all my development deals and Star Search to have had an HBO special. I would trade it all.
That was one of the highlights of my life.
I'm sure.
And I remember the night I did it the same night as Janine. You know, they'd put two comics up. But that whole taping at the Fillmore, it was Jonathan Katz and Mark Maron, and you know, it was this alternative. I remember Janine went up with notes. You know, she went up with, and I thought, if I ever went up with a piece of paper, people would be like, who the fuck do you, you know what? Aren't you
prepared?
Remember how angry
you used to get? Did you get angry? I got really angry.
I got, was like, wait, so now it's like, you work so hard and you're now the uncool kid in high school. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And now you're like just a hack. And I wasn't a hack.
Yeah.
But I always felt like they were so too cool for school. And I'm like, what? Wait, so now jokes aren't funny anymore?
And that was a big problem within my relationship, too, because he was all up business-wise.
Right, representing these people.
Representing these people and making $400 a week in New York while I was humping the road making $2,000 a week, paying for our lifestyle, basically.
Right.
And then, too, he was so ingrained in all that, that it became kind of a problem in our relationship.
Right.
And he'd be like, Janine is a god. Like, he really bought into all that. And where I was like, Janine can't work all over the country. She can work four cities and get a laugh. You know what I mean? And by the way, I admire Janine.
Oh, I love Janine.
Love her.
What she's so smart.
To it and the balls she had in a different way. I absolutely.
And she had such a fuck you attitude, which was so refreshing.
Yeah.
And I was coming from this, I got to be great. It has to be good material. You know, it was just, I was such a nerd. Like, I felt like such a nerd, and they were so, they were like, I was like, oh my God, it's so easy for them.
It's terrible for people that weren't within that circle.
Right. Because I remember on Cabaret.
Right.
And I was really close with Judy Toll. Uh-huh. And she used to do on Cabaret. I used to always stay with her in L.A. And I was like, they won't put me on. I tell stories. Why can't I get on Cabaret?
Yeah, but I get a laugh every seventh beat.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was like getting a laugh was like a curse.
Right.
And I remember before the HBO specials, they would come see you at the Improv. They would come to see your set at a comedy club.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, they still have to get a laugh in a comedy club in order to get on, you know, it was a
weird time.
So your relationship starts to.
It started to deteriorate because I was just telling someone this story. Because at the end, when he came to New York, he signed everybody. Mark Maron, Louis C.K., Todd Barry.
Yeah.
I mean, he had everybody, which were at that time were just scrambling around, you know. And I remember he used to have this joke about having sex in the butt, right? It was some stupid ass joke. And
no pun intended. And that is very funny.
And it was a joke I'd do on the road when the checks would drop, you know? And I remember one time he said to me, "Yeah, you shouldn't do that joke in New York." And I'm like, "Yeah, no shit. I just do it on the road." But very dismissive of my comedy. And then we went to go see Louis, and Louis had a joke verbatim of that joke.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, parallel thought, that, obviously. And him like, God, he's a genius. And I'd be like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
you
tell me not to do that joke.
Right.
But then that guy's a genius because he does, you know what I mean? And obviously, I love Louis. Louis is a genius, you know what I mean? But that it was very soul defeating as a woman in comedy because you were held
at
a different standard.
You know, of the Bill Hicks thing. You know, that he's allowed to do a joke.
Right, exactly.
And by the way, for the listeners, the check spot is the worst fucking spot. But when you're headlining, they drop the checks about 20 minutes before your set is over.
Yeah.
And to keep the attention of the audience, it's torture. So
because you have to keep the attention of the audience, but allow them to have the luxury to get their wallet out of the purse.
And, and also, if they're Jews, it's like, I owe $15.70. I did not have the wings.
Right.
So your marriage, you adopt two children.
We adopted two children. I am the luckiest woman.
I know, they're so cute.
They are. And the best thing about when you're divorced, when you have adopted children, is they don't look like the ex.
Right. I know, I love that.
They don't look like the ex.
So, did he want to have kids? I know that you always wanted to have kids.
Well,
which is fascinating to me because you took care of your mother, and so many people who had, you know, took care of people never want to have kids. But go ahead.
I, you know, when we were engaged, I said to him, I want you to know, I knew since I was a little girl that I would want to adopt a child. I'm up for having a child, but I want you to know because I think it's a deal breaker if you're never going to want to do that. And he would be like, you're blackmailing me. And be like, no, I'm just letting you know what's up.
Right.
And then we lived in New York and I was on the road like 30, 35 weeks a year. And because I was gone so much, that I had a hard time getting pregnant, you know? And then we tried for a year, and then I did that whole take your temperature.
Right, right.
You know, and then I just remember one time, like, it's time, get on me! And he'd be like, what the? And I just thought, you know, I don't want to get pregnant in the way that I remember the night I got pregnant. I was like, get on me!
Right.
I mean? So I said, why don't we just start the adoption process? And then, you know, and
was he into it?
He started to get into it and obviously was into it. And later he told me that he only agreed to the adoption when we were engaged and when I had told him that I wanted to do this initially or that we weren't going to be a match, that he thought he would get me pregnant and that I would lose that.
Right.
Yeah. But then we adopted and it was.
Did you have a big wedding?
We did. Wow. Well, not a huge wedding, but it was in Hawaii.
Yeah. Oh, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
See, Lauren is from Hawaii, who's here. Lauren, who's puking.
Yeah.
So you adopt these kids. When you adopt it, how many years apart are they?
Well, we got they are 17 months apart.
Right. So they're Irish twins. Not really.
But they have the same birth mother.
That's awesome.
And what happens nowadays, if you adopt one child, and we got them, you know, they still had the stink of pussy on them. That's how fresh they were.
Right.
Sorry, I said the P word.
Fucking Donald Trump said it. Go ahead.
I know. It's open
he can
now.
Say it.
It's open, right?
Yeah.
But nowadays, if you adopt one child and should the birth mother find herself in the position where she's going to adopt out another child, they try to keep the children together.
Right.
And so when my son was about a year old, they called and said she is
pregnant again.
Is going to adopt out again. And would you be interested? And it was like, yeah.
So when your first child, what his name is Cash? No. Okay, cut that out. Okay. So your first child, you hold him. It's two boys, right?
Two boys,
right.
Yeah.
You hold him for the first time.
Yeah, we didn't know. It got a little weird because when we flew, they were born in Florida, and when we went to go, we had met the birth mother. Mm-hmm. We went to Florida. And we had to come. We had all the baby shit.
Right.
We had to carry everything right? And we were on the flight to Florida, and the stewardess is like, what's up? You have this baby. No baby. We're on our way to adopt.
Right.
And then there was a big problem, which is my son's personal history with the adoption. And then we didn't know if we were going to get him. And we had to come back. Same stewardesses or flight attendants.
No.
And we were with the baby stuff now empty again.
Right.
And they couldn't even look us in the eye. They were like, oh, something went down.
Yeah. Or they were probably like, are they mentally ill that they think they have a baby? Right?
Pretty
These
awkward.
People are so.
Yeah. But then we found out 2 weeks later. So then we went back.
So you went back.
Yeah.
Did you hold this baby?
Uh-huh.
And which is the most amazing feeling,
it is,
as you know.
Yeah.
Did your husband then think, oh, my God, I'm so glad we adopted?
Of course.
Oh, all right. Good.
Of course. You know, when you go through when you adopt, that's like mental labor. Mm-hmm. You're not having physical labor. You're having emotional and mental labor. Oh, of course. He loves those boys.
Right.
And I'm extremely fortunate to have him as an ex-husband.
Right.
Yeah. It takes very
well.
Good
my
care.
My ex had my older son Henry,
right.
And I adopted him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a different kind of,
right?
But you know, I have a bio child and I have an adopted child. And
there's no difference.
No difference at all.
Yeah.
No difference at all.
Yeah.
All right. So how old were the kids when you guys?
They were, I would say, in third and fourth grade.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's about, Henry was.
So like 8 and 9.
Yeah. So Henry was about 8 and Ben was 3.
Yeah.
Or 2.5, 8 and 7.5.
Yeah.
Was it an acrimonious divorce or?
It was in the beginning a very, was fine.
Right.
And then he started dating a close friend of mine and she.
Wait.
You didn't know that?
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But,
What?
Yeah.
I hope you're not friends with her.
No, she's still my best friend. No, I'm not fucking friends with her. No.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's double piss off.
Yeah. Yeah. She was a very close friend of both of ours. And they started dating. And
Do you think they were dating before?
I don't think that.
Right.
I honestly don't think that.
Do you think they were emotionally?
I think she had a huge-ass crush on him for 2 years before that.
And was still your friend?
And was still my friend. She was married at the time and was still my friend.
Oh,
and,
my God.
Yeah. And it was always our strife came and it was always her.
Right.
It was difficult because she became crazy. You know, when people, I'm so talking out of my ass, but to me, when you have a friend and they go crazy, like in this kind of situation, they do it out of guilt or they just lose their shit. I don't know, but she became very angry and very, and then that's when it got real. It got kind of bad for a long time, and now it's better between him and I.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And we are totally fine now.
But
she's
not. Do you have feelings for her? Or you did not forgive her? Please tell me you didn't forgive her.
You know what? I didn't forgive her because her behavior became. Like, she was always very obsessive compulsive.
Right.
And she would literally email me and text me, like, sometimes 20 times a day telling me what a shitty mom I was.
Fuck her.
And this is, and by the way.
Does she have kids?
They have a child now. Beautiful girl. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting thing to go through something like this because, A, it's very similar to what my mother went through.
Right.
Because my dad married the second German lady.
Right.
He was my mother's childhood friend.
No fucking way.
Isn't that crazy?
God. That is mental.
And I remember saying to my husband at the time when I found out they were dating, I remember saying, you just don't even understand what you're putting on the boys. You don't even understand how weird it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a normal thing that people do.
Wait, so you have to talk to her. He's with her.
Well,
do you have to talk to her?
I don't because her behavior became so extreme with these emails that I had to get a lawyer and she's not by court order allowed to communicate with me. But listen to this. Last week I get an email and because she's not allowed to communicate with me. And now what she
does. I'll fucking kick her out.
Is she will email me from his account pretending to be him. And then so when I got the email, I text him like, hey, she's emailing me pretending to be you. And then he honestly gets embarrassed by it. And so he can't control it. So he texts back, you can't prove that to her, right?
Why?
Then I have to defend myself. And I'm like, yeah, I can, because you never end an email with, and lastly, I'm entirely flabbergasted. And then he goes, fuck you, bitch. And I'm like, now see, that's you.
Right, right.
No, that's a joke for my act.
That's funny.
Kind of true, kind of true.
All right. But wait, so isn't he embarrassed by her?
I can't say that. I'm a comedian.
What?
Through and through.
Yeah.
I'm a comedian through and through. I'm not the girl that you need to put in charge to run the fundraiser at the school or that your office is having.
Right.
I'm not the list maker. I'm not that girl. And she is. And I think for him,
That's what he needs.
So I say, God bless him. I was never angry they were together because I wasn't in love with my husband anymore.
Right.
And we hadn't had sex in like the last 5 years of our marriage, you know?
Wow. Five years.
Yeah. Yeah, the bananas weren't safe at my house.
Do you think that?
I walk by that fruit bowl like,
cucumbers
damn,
are better.
I'm about to fuck that Chiquita up.
Yeah, bitches. I like them green. So, What about, do you think he was fooling around?
I mean, I don't think so. I honestly...
Guys cannot not have sex for 5 years.
I think not everyone is motivated by sex.
What?
That's a reality.
Right.
A lot of most people are, but some people are not. It's a different thing. And I wish... with all my heart, I honestly say I wish them good luck. I feel sometimes, obviously, bad for my children that they have to endure her obsessiveness.
Right.
Because
do they see her a lot?
Yeah, of course. We have a normal familial
50-50?
Divorce, you know. I have him about 80% of the time. He, by the way, is one of the biggest comedy managers in the business now. And
producer.
And producer, yes. And I am so lucky that my children get to experience comedy from my point of view,
right,
and also from his point of view.
But also,
and he's a good father, and he's
you
a good father.
See comedy from now. You really have a hands-on of what a manager does.
Oh yeah,
you see both sides of being the talent and being the representative.
Absolutely. It's such a tremendous gift to have that, because most comedians never get to see that,
right,
the other side of the business.
So, you think that Rick, like, loves you more now because you're, or do you think you're more understanding of you know, your manager's?
Here's the thing. Like, one of my closest friends is Jeff Singer, and Jeff Singer.
Oh, I love Jeff.
Jeff is awesome.
Yeah.
He's like one of my best buddies.
He has a big forehead. Go.
And he does. Mm-hmm. He has a five head.
Yeah.
So he is one of the bookers that books young comedians at Montreal.
Rest, yes.
He, you know, books a lot of shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I tell people this all the time. Because of my experience that my husband was a manager, you understand why you're not getting picked. It has
right.
nothing
to
do that
with...
you can have any control over.
Right.
So it can't
And it
hurt
doesn't
your
have
feelings.
To do with
yeah.
how funny you are.
Has nothing to do with that.
Right.
And also, I don't, you know, beg my friend Jeff, give me a showcase for Montreal
right.
this year. I don't do that. Because I have a great friendship with him. I know he booked me, gave me, because I stopped doing comedy for 9 years.
Yes, we're getting to that.
Right?
Shut the fuck up.
All
yeah.
Right. Okay.
No, go. Keep going.
Okay, okay. And he gave me one of my first TV jobs for
right.
a thing that I was specifically right for.
Right.
You know, I'll never get Montreal, but that
right.
I don't care.
Right.
But, so for me, and I tell young comics this all the time, like, it's such a blessing to see the business end of it, because
right.
you take yourself out of the personal hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's not about you, and they're not
it's
thinking
not
about you.
You. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right. So you have these beautiful children,
uh-huh.
and you give up stand-up.
I gave up stand-up when my second son came, because it just got too hard. And
right.
also, when you have children, and I don't know if this happened for you, when you're a stand-up, you have to embrace all the ugliness in the world
mm-hmm.
to be able to talk about all the uncomfortable shit we all
right.
think and no one wants to say. You're
right.
that person. You
right.
want, you hope bad shit happens.
Right.
Because you want to write jokes about
right.
it, right? When you become a mother, whether it's an adopted mother or you squirted that baby out yourself, you only want to see the beauty in the world.
Right.
Because you have this baby.
You have
want,
a whole different...
You want the world to be this wonderful place that your child is in.
All right. Obviously, you're not Jewish. But... I do. You do become softer.
Yes.
You definitely
yes.
become softer, and you realize it's not all about you. That's the thing. It's
right.
not about you.
Yeah.
But you knew that. You had that really early in life.
I had that really early in life.
Right.
But then it was also, he started to do well, and it's like, I can't go on the road 35 weeks
right,
a year
right, right.
with a partner who is kicking ass at what he started to do really
right.
well, you know? And so it had to be me
all right.
sitting in
there. It's gotta be me! So you are a photographer. So you took classes at NYU, New
oh,
School.
Yeah,
yeah. And
I
you-
always, and I'll blame Louis C.K. on this, amongst others. But Louis was always a kind of guy that was doing creative projects, making
right.
little films. All you
right.
know, the amount of work he did before he became famous
right.
was tremendous.
Right.
And he was very inspiring to me in that way. And I'd always kind of liked photography. My mother even had a little camera, and I used to always play with it. You know, before we were lost everything. But so I went to, you know, film classes at NYU, made some short films, and was really into the photography. And
right.
because I was on the road so much, that there was no internet back in those.
Right.
It was very new in those days. No one really had Wi-Fi.
Oh, God.
Or any of that.
I still have PTSD from fucking being stranded somewhere and wanting to, like, kill myself.
Yes. Go. It was a terrible time to be traveling out and about as a woman or as anybody at that time. And so I had a lot of time, downtime, and I'd be in the middle of fucking Georgia. And I'm like, you know what? I need to have a camera in my hand so I can keep myself entertained as I'm entertaining.
Right.
And then that became kind of a big deal. I started photographing comedy pretty early on. I have all the earliest of Marin and Louie.
Right.
And I started to really do that heavily when the boys got a little bit older because I had stopped doing comedy.
Did you miss it?
No. When I left comedy, I was like emotionally driving in my car, flipping off the rearview mirror to comedy.
Why?
Like, fuck you, comedy. Oh, yeah, I was so angry because all the alternative scene, how much disrespect I was getting from my own husband without my skill. So I was like, fuck this. Fuck. I couldn't even watch it.
That's so great.
I couldn't even watch it on TV. I couldn't even, when people, you know, Tracy Morgan, Dale Hughley, all these people would be at our house, I'd be like, I don't want to fucking talk about comedy.
Right.
Fuck comedy. I hate it. Never thought in a million years ever that I would go back to comedy.
That's so fascinating because I gave birth. First of all, I had Henry.
Uh-huh.
I worked at Rosie, but I still did sets.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like the mommy, you know. Because Sharon was working and whatever. And then I was doing stand-up up until, I guess, a week before. I mean, I was there, you know, doing these. Oh, my God. You know, I haven't got my period. I think I have to go to the doctor. You know, I was doing all these things. Yeah. And I'd be like, I'd make believe I was going into labor and I'd pour
so
water on the floor. I was just
I'm actually jealous that you got to make fun of those kind of things. So I didn't get
and
to
I
do
did
that.
The Aristocrats movie when I was. But anyway, so it's and I never stopped. I never stopped. And it's and so I thought about it and I thought, oh, I'm going to do my one person show and I'm not. But even when I was on a sitcom, like, all I wanted to do was go out and do stand up. So I also wanted to be like, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know what it was that but you were getting a creative, you know, buzz from your photography.
From my photography and filmmaking.
So what made you go back?
When I got divorced and things were very ugly within my divorce, I became pretty despondent and, I was just looking, you know, at that time on the internet, like, are other women going through this thing in particular? Like,
how long ago was this?
This is probably 8 years ago. And
yeah.
So I was just like, I think I need to express myself again.
Right.
Because I got really angry because, I got really angry, you know, and I was just like, I got to be able to talk about this. And you know, also because he was such a big manager, you know, a lot of comedians, everyone, you know, when you get divorced, when you're in a situation where you're with someone who is
so powerful,
dominating
right.
what's going on with them, you know, it's a very natural thing that the people who want to be in business are going to go with that person.
Right.
And I understood that, you know.
Right.
And so it's like I then had no friends. You know, I had a couple mommy friends, but I had no comedy friends anymore. Like, because I was lucky when I left it, I still have my comedy friends.
Right.
You know, so I felt so super alone. And I was like, I think I have to get back into comedy. And it was more frightening the second time.
Oh, I bet.
A million miles in the first time, because the second time coming, doing it the first time after almost 9 years off, well, you understood the stakes.
Yeah.
The first time.
So
you're
how
just
was
an ignorant
your first
dumb
set?
Fuck.
How was your first set?
Terrible. I was so nervous.
But you realized. Yeah.
Because I was so stripped of all my self-esteem.
I know. I had that too. I had a very bad clinical depression 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
It was divorce. I put my mother in a nursing home.
Right.
I was in debt. It was like the perfect storm.
Right.
And and I remember thinking, what did I do for all those years?
Yeah.
You know, what why am I in this situation after I've worked so fucking hard?
Yeah.
It's just, it's unbelievable. It's an incredible journey. Yeah, so yeah. Here you are. You're doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing this one-person show. Right. Or, well, you're going to be doing this.
And by the way, taking off all those years was a godsend.
Right, I bet. And you were there with your kids.
I could come back to it. And here's a weird thing. When you take that amount of time off from comedy and you come back to it, you're not the same person that did those jokes.
Right.
So I tried a couple of my old jokes.
And they don't work.
They don't work because you don't believe that anymore.
Right,
you're a different person now.
Before we wrap it up.
Okay.
I really want to get your take on the fact that feminism has become
a dirty word?
Well, no. That a lot of people view feminism as, look, I can talk like a guy. I can talk about sex. I can do this. There's no more double standard when it comes to sex and sexuality and gender. And I can look sexy.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, as a feminist, I feel like, I don't want to be like a guy. You know, like I want to be a woman and be empowered and powerful and not have to do it the way a guy does.
Right.
But there are a lot of female comics now who are allowed to be sexy, like you were sexy, who are very feminine, like you were feminine when it wasn't. Do you have any sort of, you know, not resentment, but
you know, go back to the Amy Schumer thing.
Well, it's like we have Amy, there's
so many
there's beautiful Rachel.
You know, yes.
Yeah, there's so many beautiful young comics.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're funny.
Absolutely.
But do you ever think back like, wow, you know, if I had been born now, you know, like.
No, I try not to think in that way because I wouldn't have had the same chances. You know, the reason I was.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it was a time
of hot comedy. Stand up was hot. And yeah.
Right. You know, and there wasn't a million people like me. If I was starting out now as a young woman, would I have been able to shine? I can't say that.
Right.
It's like it's an unanswerable question.
Have any young comics come to you and said, I used to watch you or
sometimes,
you know,
I remember when I got back in and I was doing some open mic, and because I understood I can't go back to the Comedy Store or the Laugh Factory right away. They've moved on.
Right.
And but also I understood from having started pretty much my career in L.A. that I got seen before I should have been seen.
Yeah. You have to be prepared.
Yeah. It's better to do outside and then come to New York or you get your
I always say that. To my students. I say,
because
you know,
one person will see you once, that's fucking it for them. Yeah,
and that's all they think. But remember when we started that you were going to audition for something, you had a spot, you couldn't change it. It didn't matter if someone puked right before you went on or some guy was like shaming women. That was your chance. It wasn't like you could do a video and send it. It was like a whole different
thing. Thing. So, I do have a real quick, the great Paul Mooney.
Yes.
I love Paul Mooney.
Yes.
And one of the other stories that I would like to share is that and when I was first at the Comedy Store, I always got the 8 o'clock spot. Because that's Felicia Michaels.
Right.
And Mitzi wanted to make sure I got a spot, but it was always 8 o'clock spot with three people because everyone always kind of lingered in slowly came in. So I said to Mitzi one night, how come I always get the 8 o'clock spot? Hubris of being 23 years old. Why? I deserve better than just the 8 o'clock spot, Mitzi, right? And so she didn't say anything. I'm sure rolled her eyes inside and out. And the next week I get my spot. It's at 10:30 or 11 o'clock.
Right.
Guess who I go on after? Paul Mooney.
No fucking way! That is the curse of death.
And Paul Mooney.
I'll show you, Felicia.
I know. Paul, I know. And that's what she did.
Yeah, I'm going to show you, Felicia.
Paul Mooney is one of the most aggressive, brilliant. He gives no shits.
Right.
He's Pryor's writer.
Right.
He's the guy. Wonderful comic. You know, like, so he goes on, and Paul doesn't care if you like him.
Right.
And he totally, ruins the crowd in the most delicious way that you can for Paul Mooney. Rooney. And then he brings me up, and I am dying a death because right. I should only have the 8 o'clock
right,
spot.
Right, right, right.
And, like, the crowd hates me.
Right.
And then I say,
I can't
oh,
even imagine you yeah. following Paul Mooney.
It's so cool, especially yeah. at that time, right?
Right.
And Paul Mooney says the N-word 100 million
yeah,
times,
yeah, yeah.
right? And so I'm going at it for 5 minutes. I get nothing. And then I don't know why I said this because Paul was still in the room,
right.
you know? And I go, oh, Paul Mooney can get up here and say the yeah. N-word. And I said the N-word, you know, a million times. But a girl right. can't talk about my pussy. And the crowd was like, ooh. Like literally, shrunk back in their chair.
Right,
like,
right.
it's so gross that you said that.
Right.
And Paul Mooney laughed his ass
right,
off.
Right, I bet.
And he was always kind of not cool to me. But after that moment,
yeah.
I was like totally okay for Paul
yeah.
Mooney.
Yeah.
Lyft is one of the best things that you ever brought into my life. Can I just say?
Because Uber, like, they do that surge pricing. So Lyft is like, if no one knows, it's like this, it's a car service like Uber, but they don't surge. So like the other night, right? I was at the Cellar downtown and it was, you know, that's like a 30 something. It's like 20.
Mm-hmm.
$18 to $20, which is what I make. Anyway, but you know, if it's raining...
If the Pope's in town.
I mean, did you know that they did this other company that rhymes with Uber? There was a terrorist attack in Australia.
I heard about this.
Because I told you. There was a terrorist attack in Australia.
That's how I get my news.
Yeah. And people were trying to get out of the area, and Uber did a surge.
That's,
I mean, on a terrorist attack.
Well, I mean, Lyft has done free rides during certain things and campaigns while Uber is doing surge pricing
right.
in New York City anyway. I mean, okay, so I've tried Uber, and I know Uber first started out as like this zhuzhy, you know, if you want to take a black car somewhere, you call Uber or whatever. Lyft started out as a carpool service, which is really cool.
Right.
Again, I love these companies, these, you
well,
know,
they, you can, you know what's great?
People.
Is that you can do a share ride too?
Yes, and it's so much more money off than a regular ride. And they even have this option that it's like, oh, you've got, you know, if you want to wait 10 minutes, you can
right.
get an even bigger discount. So
right.
not only do you share a carpool ride on Lyft Line, but then you can choose an even cheaper option
right.
if you have the time.
Mm-hmm.
I've met some cool people on those Lyft Line rides. I've met some really cool Lyft drivers.
I know.
Actually.
The drivers are really nice.
And, I mean, God knows, it's gotten us to places just on time.
You actually missed an episode.
Right.
Okay.
But... had I been able to walk to the street,
mm-hmm.
I'd have gotten in a lift.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I'm so glad you're back doing
thank
stand
you.
Up.
I'm very happy to be back doing
it. And you're living where?
I live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you love bringing the kids up there?
To see comedy or?
No, bringing the children up, like that they're growing up in. That their home
in
is in L.A.
You know, it has its bonuses and it has its
pluses and minuses.
Minuses as well, you know. They have a good life.
I get pissed off a lot.
Really?
And you, I know. And you mentioned anger once
uh-huh.
during these
right.
past seven
right.
hours. And
yeah.
I need to know, because
yeah.
we ask everyone this, what pisses you off the most?
Oh, I can't tolerate a liar. I can't
yeah.
tolerate. Growing up, my father used to tell tall tales. He would
right.
call them tall tales.
Right.
And he would say things like, when I was a young man in Stockton, California, Sally Field used to go to my high school. And like, he would just make up these
right.
stories.
Shit. Yeah.
And he would be like, yeah, but if I calculate that, that would have been around the time she was filming The Flying Nun. So I don't think, Dad, that she would have got off
right.
the surfboard or Gidget or
right.
whatever it was, or and you know, and would have gone up to Stockton, California to go to your high school.
Right.
You know what I mean? But my brother, who had a lot of emotional problems, because my dad is a natural storyteller,
right.
saw that my dad would sometimes you know, tell outlandish
right.
stories and fib and how people loved
right,
him for
right,
it, because
right.
my dad's that guy. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right, right.
It's funny, you know? And my brother was a compulsive liar.
Right.
And So for me,
God, I can't believe you married a manager.
I know.
Talk but, about compulsive liars. And you're in show business.
And in show business.
Yeah.
But I can't tolerate a liar. I can't. To me, it's like, I will forgive a lot of shit.
Right.
And even if you lie, I will say, this is my one thing I can't tolerate.
Right, right.
And I'll give you three chances, but I can't tolerate a liar.
So, like when, you know, your close friend is having an affair with your husband.
Yeah.
Were you like...
I wasn't upset, and I will tell you honestly, I wasn't in love with my husband.
Right.
It didn't hurt in that way.
Right.
It didn't feel
but
like
But weren't you
betrayal.
Mad at her for fucking...
No. Because it
didn't
feel like
a
betrayal in that sense. What felt like a betrayal was always her poor behavior.
Oh, okay.
And why after that. That felt like why...
Because I want to fucking kill her.
Well, you know what? We all have our shit.
Yeah.
You know, my stepmother, I was always very angry. This is why, too. I was always very angry with my mother. I'm going to tell you something I've never told anyone else before on air.
Mm-hmm.
I have Crohn's disease like my mother.
No way.
I have Crohn's disease, and I'm so very lucky that I have it in this day and age.
Right, of course.
I've never said that to anyone out loud. And I'm so fortunate. But when I went through my divorce, I got very sick with Crohn's.
Right, right, right.
And I was on a feeding tube and didn't eat for 4 months to give my stomach bowel rest.
I need that.
And and I probably lost 35 pounds.
Oh, my God.
It was like Auschwitz.
Right.
I was literally like that. And my stepmother flew in. This is a woman that I fucking hated when I was a kid. And I've repaired all the shit with my dad. My stepmother flew in, took care of my children. Before, when I was going down under anesthesia, she was at the end of my bed rubbing my feet.
Oh my
I
God.
Woke up to her rubbing my feet and taking care of my family for me. And I tell my sons that all the time. You're always going to be around a difficult person when you grow up. It
right.
could be your child. It could be your wife.
Right.
It could be your boss.
Right.
And I tell
what if they're gay? It could be their boyfriend. Go.
Exactly. And I tell them all the time, how you are uncomfortable with your stepmother. I had that. And now she's my best friend.
Right.
And as I can say, I can't be around that person that married my husband because she has unrecognizable and unreasonable anger towards me for I don't know what reason.
Right.
I'm not mad at her.
Right.
She just has to stop. And by the way, I got so lucky because I had to do therapy with my kids. And one day the therapist said to me, I'm not allowed to tell you this legally about or to diagnose someone to you. But if I was you, I would go and Google narcissistic rage disorder.
Right.
And that unlocked everything.
Right.
So I tell my children, because that's what she has.
Right.
I know I'm talking out of my ass, but after reading that, I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
But I tell my children all the time, she's not a terrible person. She has great ideas. She has a hard time with managing her emotions and anger. And you have to be able to deal with that. And I hated my stepmother, and now she is my greatest ally, and you have to look at her that way too. You're not going to maybe like what's going down or how to behave. And in fact, I never talked about my or never said bad things about my ex-husband to my children.
You can't.
Because I grew up in that situation.
Right, you can't.
And, you know, I'm not, and I learned my lesson.
Right.
And so I, one time after therapy, my son said, I'm so mad at dad and his wife and, you know, that he cheated. And it's like, no. That never happened. I was never angry or hurt by that. I wasn't in love with your father, and your father wasn't in love with me anymore. It was always about the poor behavior from her and making that stop. And I feel bad that you have to deal with that. But you have to let all that shit go and learn how to let it roll off your back.
God, you're such a good mom.
No, I fuck up in other ways. I let them play as many video games as they want to play.
Oh, please.
I give them sugar all the time.
Oh,
you know?
I do. Like, I have a snack drawer. The kids who have, the parents who are like... Now gluten and, that shit. They always come over to my house to fucking eat Oreos and ring dings. We ask every guest this.
Okay.
Are you on any antidepressants?
No.
Have you ever been?
No.
Fuck! I knew it!
No.
Oh,
no.
All right.
No.
And how are you feeling? Are you feeling okay? You're healthy?
My health is fucking great.
Good.
I had,
good.
I got very sick about 3 years mm-hmm. ago because I had the Crohn's. I had always traveled with antibiotics
right.
because I also traveled to photograph all around the world as
right.
well.
Except
and
Judy with, Gold. Yeah,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm going to so photograph.
Yeah. yeah. Okay.
So I had not been feeling great, and I that was the protocol, like if I'm on the road and the Crohn's started to attack. And I also understood then, because my mother had so many surgeries, laparoscopic surgery
yeah.
was a year away when I got so sick during my
right.
divorce. So that's why I chose to be on a feeding tube to get, mm-hmm. to kind of, you know, go to the extreme of that, because I was wanted to wait till I got the laparoscopic
right,
surgery
right, right, right.
what is more common.
Right.
And so I understood that I wanted to do that. And so the protocol was, if I was on the road and I wasn't feeling well, that I could start, you know, with the doctor's permission,
right.
have the antibiotics. I wasn't feeling well, and I went on the antibiotics and started feeling better. And then it kind of went through this phase. I'm getting to a point here where when I would kind of wean off the antibiotics, I would get immediately sick again.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was 3 months later, and I'd had on my third CAT scan, I had, and it was some fancy dude in Beverly Hills. He came to me and he was like, can I validate the doctor, the actual
right.
doctor came, can I validate your parking? And I was like, what the fuck is going
right,
on?
Right, right
no
right,
doctor
right.
comes in and says that
yeah,
off
right,
the bat, right?
Right.
Turns out my appendix had burst and I'd been walking around it with it for 3 months.
What?
Can you fucking
what
believe
the fuck
that?
Is that?
I know. You know, more people think, oh, it's automatic death, and for a lot of people, it is. But a lot of people actually survive and walk around with a burst appendix.
Wow.
More
so
than
what
think,
did they do?
Than, so I.
Do you have to have? They take it out, right?
Well, because it had because it's all that poison in your
right,
system.
Right. So it disintegrated.
So it really attacked
it
everything.
Up.
So then
yeah.
I had to go on these antibiotics to even get the infection down
oh
to a manageable
God.
Thing, and it made me photosensitive. I couldn't go out. I got
yeah.
So
you're not
fucking,
allowed. To, yeah, you can't go in
yeah,
the sun.
Yeah, it was like if I was out in the sun for a minute, I would have to sit down. I would,
right.
It was like screwy, but the was a good thing because when they did it all laparoscopically,
yeah,
which was amazing that
right.
they could do that, and. I have been 100% healthy since then because where my problem was in my stomach was right by the appendix and
wow.
it kind of fed off of each other, and so they were able to fix that. And
3 years you've been healthy?
I've been totally healthy for 3 years.
Yay!
I know,
Patrick,
I know.
Fucking clap!
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right, motherfucker. How old are the kids now?
They are 15 and 16.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mine's
yeah.
14 and 19.
All right. So
yeah.
you don't touch weird stuff you see on the wall, if you know what I'm
yeah.
saying.
Yeah. And the socks are really hard for some reason.
I had to say to my son, this is weird because my housekeeper came up to me and she's like, I keep finding his socks underneath the bed. And I was like, he is... What are you doing in my bed when
right.
I'm not home? And I'm like, dude, do what you gotta do. Because I grew up
right.
with a mother who didn't shame about
right.
sex. But you gotta clean that shit up.
Right,
you
right.
know what I mean?
Oh my God. Patrick, this was pretty amazing.
This was a great interview.
Thank you.
Really?
It was
wow.
great. Yes, the stories were
fucking phenomenal.
Very, very
thank
good.
You. Thank you.
You're
thank
welcome.
You. More to come. More to come.
I can't thank you enough for being on the...
It was so great to talk you up. I haven't seen you in so
I
long.
I know! And you're fucking fascinating.
Oh, thank you. You too. You
oh,
too.
Oh, please.
Please. True, though.
I want to work with you on your one-person show.
I want you to work with me on my one-person show.
I want you to come back.
I am going to come back.
All right, good. And what else? Do we have anything else to say? Patrick.
You were asking me?
Yeah. You
no.
don't fucking nod. No one can see you nodding.
No, I don't have anything. Oh,
ladies and gentlemen, my guest, Felicia Michaels, check her out. What are you on Twitter?
I am at Felicia Michaels on Twitter.
F-E-L-I-C-I-A.
Michaels, common spelling, and on Instagram. Yeah, follow me.
Oh, yeah, you probably have good Instagram photos.
Oh, sometimes I do. Sometimes. All right. You know, because when you're photographing and then when you're doing comedy, it's two different sides of your brain.
Hello.
So I go through periods
where I take
the
worst photos.
I bet you take awesome photos.
Oh, please.
I bet you do.
So look for Felicia at a comedy club near you. You'll be here in July.
I'm going to be here in July,
New York,
to put on my
one-person show.
My one-man woman show.
Yeah. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Judy.
And thank you all for listening.
Thank
and
you.
So long!
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.